Hello and welcome to episode 46 of the Two Guys, Three Consoles podcast. My name is Matt Leach, also known as Leachman. And with me as always is my friend and co-host, Jeremy J. Monster Fowler.
Hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Not bad, mate, you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Not bad, thank you. So we're trying to make it through the hell that is January. It's not my It's my least favourite month. I don't know about anybody else, but I can't wait to get to the end of January.
Yeah, I'm about the same. And it's what, January the 375th or something today?
Yeah, January the 93rd or something like that. Yeah. it does become a long month.
February's not that much better.
No, at least it's a little bit better because it starts to get a bit lighter in the mornings and stay a bit later in the evenings. But, you know, depths of winter, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We love it, really. Right, I think we'll crack on with some gaming news. Do you want to go first?
Okay. So Nintendo have put out a free update to Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Yes.
And it's for both the Switch 1 and Switch 2. And you can now play as Dixie Kong. And then when playing alone, you grab a barrel. You can switch between either Diddy or Dixie.
Right, cool.
Playing with two people, player two can switch between Diddy or Dixie by pressing the stick. There's a turbo attack mode been added where you can race through the stages at high speed. If you clear the course once, it will appear at the same time as the time attack mode. If you can clear it within the time limit, you require a turbo medal. Now supports Brazilian Portuguese, which apparently wasn't a thing before. And several other issues have been addressed. They've also upped the resolution on the Switch 2 version, and it now includes game share. So, of course, that means that if you've got a copy on Switch 2 and you've got a friend who's got a Switch 1 that hasn't got the game, you can use game share to play with them.
Oh, nice. I've yet to boot up the Switch 2 version. I've got, obviously, the Switch 1 version on the cartridge here. Mm-hmm. It's so brutal, that game. It's just brutal.
Yes, it's very hard.
Still getting over the brutality of the level. I mean, it's good. It is good, but it is hard.
I mean, I sacked it off because I think, as I've said to you off air, I found myself watching the gameplay itself to finish levels for me more than I was actually finishing levels myself.
Yeah. I can't say I blame you. Some of them are ridiculous.
So hard.
Yeah, they are ridiculous. But that's Donkey Kong Country for you.
yes, although I think the Donkey Kong Country, I think arguably the retro-made Donkey Kong Countries are even harder than the rare ones were.
Yeah, I think so.
Like Tropical Freeze and also this one, they're both super difficult.
Yeah, Tropical Freeze was, I mean, I completed it, but it was hard, definitely. I wonder if they'll do another, like, 2D Donkey Kong after Bonanza.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, Retro didn't make Bonanza.
No.
So who knows what's happening next with Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out.
What have you got this week?
I've got a couple of bits of news. I'll start off with the rumoured, and this is rumoured, Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas remasters are not expected to be anytime soon, apparently.
Oh.
And this was off a website called Windows Central. Somebody called Jez Corden said that he isn't expecting them to be imminent. He thinks Fallout 3 will be out first, followed by New Vegas. But, yeah, don't expect them to come out anytime soon. I mean, it has been rumoured. There's been nothing confirmed from Bethesda that they're even doing this. But there was that leak a few years ago where Fallout 3 a remaster appeared on, like, an internal document.
Mm.
So it's pretty certain that they are being worked on. But who knows when they'll be coming out.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's this countdown on both Amazon and the Bethesda website.
Yeah.
That ends when season 2 of the TV show ends.
Yeah, we don't know what it is, do we?
No, and everyone just sort of presumed the countdown was until these remasters come out.
Yeah, it's possible. It still might happen. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe this person on this website's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be counting down to something completely different. Maybe it's a new spin-off, another Fallout series, maybe. I wouldn't put that past Amazon to do another Fallout series, like set in another part of the USA or something. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe go over to the Fallout 3 world of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. Mm. That's that bit of news. And another bit of sad news, really, is that Ubisoft have cancelled six projects, which includes the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake. They've also closed two studios and further layoffs in another major company restructure.
Wow.
Which, yeah, I mean, obviously it's bad. People losing their jobs again. Yeah. Ubisoft are going through a bit of a time at the moment. And the Sands of Time remake had was in a bit of trouble developer-wise. They farmed it out to originally to a team in India, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then Ubisoft Montreal came in and took over. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they restarted it or not.
I think they did, from scratch.
Yeah, because it came out, it was announced quite a while ago. I think it was in 2021 they announced it.
It was, but it didn't get a very good reaction when they first showed it off. I think people were expecting more from a remake.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, they've cancelled six of the games as well. Apparently not listed here what games they are, might be some unannounced games, and also closed two studios. So, but yeah, it's kind of sad that, you know, Ubisoft, once the powerhouse in the, you know, 2000s and 2010s, early part of 2010s anyway, that, you know, you couldn't really make a bad game, but they've had had some problems in the last few years, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, with allegations of abuse and crunch and all that lot, and people being laid off, it's never good. So,
well, it's always not good to, you know, always bad to hear people losing their jobs.
Well, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully, they can turn it around, and who knows, maybe sometime in the future they might restart development on a remake of Prince of Persia, but I doubt it.
Yeah,
there's supposed to be this Assassin's Creed Black Flag remaster or remake coming before the end of March next year.
Next year, or that was this year.
Yeah, they've changed it now. Oh. So this says it will be launched in the coming financial year, so before March of next year.
Right, okay.
So yeah, maybe it'll come this year, who knows? But that's been rumored for a while. I don't think they confirmed it. I don't think they did. But yeah, I think you're right. It was supposed to come out before the end of March this year, but they have delayed it to the next financial year. So anytime before March next year, end of March next year. So yeah, clearly going through some issues, but, well, everyone who's got laid off, we wish them well and hopefully they find new jobs.
Yeah.
And I think that's it for news. So that takes us into what we've been playing.
Right. Yeah.
Shall I go first?
Yes.
So I've been playing more Red Dead Redemption, and I finished the main story. Thanks. I went back and completed it. I am going to spoil it. So spoiler alert, if you have not played Red Dead Redemption 1.
15 years old or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like came out in May 2010, so it's, you know, nearly 16 years old. Mm. So John Marston at the end of the game gets shot to death. And then you're like, you play as Jack Marston, who's his son.
Yes.
And what happens is Jack and his mum, Abigail, John's wife, you see him riding away at the end of the game. And then it's a few years later, Abigail's also died. Jack's a bit older. And you basically, from that point onwards, you play as Jack.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can mop up any side missions, etc. But I didn't really like playing as Jack. I didn't like his character model. I didn't like the voice actor. So what I did, I saved it right before the last mission, reloaded, so I'm playing as John.
Right.
What that means is you can still do everything, but I think it must be programmed into the game where John wears a certain outfit just before the game ends, mm-hmm. and I can't change my outfit anymore.
Right.
So there's several different outfits that you can have in the game, and I can't change my outfit. So I can only think there's something to do with that. So to do outfits, I'm going to have to finish the game again and then play as Jack so I can change outfits if I want to do that. So there's no trophy tied to it, I don't think, for outfits. I don't believe so, other than the 100%, which you can still do as John anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's still a really good game. I'm glad I replayed through it, even though I replayed through it a couple of years ago. I still enjoy that story. It's you know, it's one of Rockstar's better non-GTA games, I would say. Because Red Dead Redemption 2 is actually a prequel to this game.
Yes.
And spoilers for Red Dead Redemption 2. Once you finish the main story of that, you play as John Marston in the epilogue of that game.
All right, cool.
Which leads you into the beginning of Red Dead Redemption 1, which is pretty cool. So they're good at doing that. But they did improve the mechanics somewhat in Red Dead Redemption 2, but because there has been a few glitches in this version, like graphical glitches and game bugs, which I would have thought they've done the bare minimum to remaster this game on PS5, like they did with PS4. They've literally just upped the resolution, improved textures, and that's about it. They've done no bug squashing or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's the same on the Switch version.
Yeah, there is no bug squashing in this game. They've literally just released it as is, apart from the resolution. There's one trophy that you have to get where you have to kill all the buffalo. There's like 20 buffalo in the game, and they don't respawn when you kill them. I got that trophy yesterday, kind of going into Platinum Watch here, but I'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the buffaloes, I'd killed most of them, and then the rest of them just disappeared. But I think they're supposed to, because then you come back later and they respawn. So whether that's bug or not, I don't know. Probably just part of the game. But well worth playing through if you enjoyed Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm-hmm. Or you enjoy like westerns like I do, it's definitely a good game.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been playing this week. I haven't played anything else other than that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. What about you?
So I only started this today, but I have borrowed, Ad very kindly lent me his son's copy of Ghost of Yote.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm still very early on. I'm not even sure if I'm an hour in.
Right.
But unlike Ghost of Tsushima, I was instantly all in, like, going claws into me straight away.
Oh, I like to hear that. I like to hear that. It is different from Tsushima. It's very different. I mean, obviously, it's a follow-up to that, but I'd be interested to see how you progress, because, I've gushed about it a few times on this podcast.
I mean, I've done the prologue, and I'm in chapter one.
Okay.
And I've just been to the inn.
Yeah.
And killed all the dudes in there, trying to find some more of the Yote 6 or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think I'm very, very early on. Not even sure if I've played an hour. But enjoyed what I played so far and will likely stick with it.
Excellent. I'd be interested to see how you play through like the missions, whether you just like mainline it or do what I did and do everything else but the main story. It's just because I enjoyed it so much. I'd be interested to see your take on it when you've played a few more hours of it.
Yeah, the combat's decent. It's very high production values. I mean, it's Tsushima had as well, but this one very much so, even more than Tsushima, I think.
Very much so. I mean, they're big fans of the, I can't remember his name, the director from Japan who did the Seven Samurai. I can't remember, it's escaped me. Yeah, but they're big fans of that genre of movies, really big fans, and you can tell.
Yeah,
that was Tsushima as well. So,
right.
Yeah, excellent. I'm glad you've got access to a copy of it and can play through. Cool.
Yeah.
You been playing anything else? Was there?
Not really much else. Like a little bit beforehand this week, I played a bit more Plants vs Zombies Replanted, and completed New Game Plus. Only because I didn't really have that much more to play at the time. And I've only got 3 achievements left in the Xbox version of Splintered Fate, Ninja Turtles. So I have been playing a bit of that, but the 3 I've got left to like do a perfect run, complete a run where you do all the harder versions of every single, like of all the portals and all the bosses. And then it's like the equivalent of the platinum, which is like get all achievements. And that's the only ones I've got left. So I've not managed to get them. Okay. And the Xbox version is super buggy as well, and it like crashes and shit and stuff like that, so it's annoying.
Yeah, very annoying. Yeah. Right, so it takes into Retro Corner. I'll let you go first on this one.
Okay, mine this week is, and again, holding it to the camera that we can't see, House of the Dead Overkill on the Wii.
So House of the Dead was an arcade series, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, with was that the machines that had the like, machine gun mounted on the front?
Yep.
Yeah, and it was like House of the Dead, House of the Dead 2, and House of the Dead 3?
You think so, yeah.
I think so, wasn't it, yeah. Which is, it's zombies, isn't it?
Yes, and this one's a prequel. It's got still an on-rail shooter, but you use the Wii remotes to fire at the screen. I mean, and light gun shooters work pretty well as a genre on the Wii.
Yeah, There was that Dead Space Extraction, I think it was.
Yeah, that was one as well.
Yeah, I played that on the Wii. That was quite good. I enjoyed that.
Cool.
But House of the Dead Overkill, yeah.
This one's like a Grindhouse inspired. It's one of the very few 18s on the Wii. It's got a big 18 certificate on the front of the box. And it's, I guess, technically a prequel, but I think it's like sort of non-canonical sort of thing. And it's set during the Cold War.
Oh, right.
And like 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And he still plays Agent G, who's like the main character from the House of the Dead games.
Yeah.
And he forces.
I didn't realize there was a House of the Dead game even on the Wii, to be honest.
No?
No.
Well, there's a couple. There's this one, and I've also recently got the House of the Dead 2 and 3 on the Wii as well, which I got from that secondhand, you know, retro store when I was in Wales.
Yeah.
So you're like forced to team up with this Isaac Washington character who is trying to avenge his father's murder, which the big bad Caesar masterminded. And it's full of swearing, blood, guts, gore, your standard sort of grindhouse stuff. I think at one point one of the characters is like taking a piss onto the camera or something like that.
Yeah. Sounds fairly typical.
But you can upgrade all the weapons and get new ones, and it's got two player co-op. It's good fun if you like a good light gun game, and of course you can use it with those sort of light gun attachment things for the Wii, where you can put the Wii remote into the front of it to make it into a gun.
Yeah.
If you're into that sort of thing. I think there's quite a few light gun games on the Wii.
Yeah.
I haven't got many of them. That Medal of Honor I got recently for like £4 secondhand has got a light gun mode.
Yeah.
So that one technically is one. And I think there's a, I forget what it's called, there's a Sega made one that you can like finish in like half an hour.
Yeah. I don't know what the name of that one is though.
No, I can't remember either. And there's probably a bunch more that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But yeah, it was a good game. It came out in 2009, and it was made by like they're called Headstrong.
Yeah, it'd be really cool if they did like the old kind of the retro light gun games, like Operation Wolf and Operation Thunderbolt.
Yeah,
that'd be cool on the Wii.
So yeah, it was made by Headstrong and then published by Sega.
Mm.
And there was a typing version released for PC called Typing of the Dead Overkill. Which, of course, is a sequel to the Typing of the Dead original game on PC, where instead of shooting things, you type to like kill the zombies. And then there's also a version of House of the Dead Overkill released on PS3.
Okay.
That worked with the Move.
Oh, the Move controllers, yeah.
Yeah, those controllers look like dildos.
Yes, they look very weird, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, with those little like lights on the end that go yellow, and blue and pink and red and green.
I mean, I knew plenty of people that had a PS3. I don't think I knew any of them who actually had the Move controllers. Did you have them?
I didn't have a set of Move controllers, no. I did consider buying a set of Move controllers.
Right.
Purely because I think Dead Space Extraction came out on the PS3.
Yeah.
And you could use the Move controllers, but you could also just use a normal DualShock 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't buy that. Plus, the Move controllers were pretty notorious for being quite shit.
Yes, and they weren't cheap either, were they?
No, they weren't cheap. It's because it's Sony and they like to charge money.
Yeah.
It's funny because light gun games kind of disappeared once the Wii and Wii U were no longer. I mean, there's been no games like this on the Switch, I don't think, have there?
I mean, there's a House of the Dead 2 remaster that came out on the Switch recently where you can use the Joy-Cons as like light gun controllers. Okay. But it's not supposed to be very good.
No, I can't imagine it'd be that good, to be honest. But like, they are a product of their times, aren't they, like on games?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
What's yours this week?
So my one is a game called Trantor, The Last Stormtrooper.
Right.
And this came out in 1987.
Right.
And I played it on my Amstrad CPC.
Okay, now with the name, if I didn't see the Trantor part, I would think the Last Stormtrooper would be some sort of Star Wars.
No, it's got nothing to do with Star Wars.
No, okay.
No. The reason he's called the Last Stormtrooper is he's basically a survivor of the destruction of his spaceship. So at the very beginning of the game, his spaceship gets destroyed and everybody who's on it apart from him survives. So therefore, he's the Last Stormtrooper. It's very much a side-scrolling shoot-em-up game.
Right.
It's a very, very, very short game. You can complete this game if you know what you're doing in about 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, it's very short. Because what they were planning to do was, there's actually a message at the end of the game saying that Trantor Last Stormtrooper 2 will be out soon, and they never made it.
Oh, really?
It was from a developer called Probe Software, a publisher called Go, which was owned by US Gold.
Right, yeah.
They were notorious for making... So
they were infamous, weren't they?
Yeah, infamous for making short... you know, crappy little games, and also doing arcade ports because they had a deal with Activision for, like, you know, Outrun and a load of different other games.
Not just arcade. I think they did ports of Street Fighter to various sort of home computers that weren't very good.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, the Outrun version of the Amstrad has no music.
Right.
So what they bundled in with the tape was, there was two tapes, a tape that you loaded for the game and an audio tape so you could put it on in the background with the sound.
We haven't got any music here. Have some, you can play it at the same time, lining exactly up with the game.
That was a bit ridiculous, to be honest. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the attractive thing about this game when I was 13 years old was the sprite of the main character was really big.
Right.
I think the Amstrad version was the most colourful version because that was the strength of the Amstrad CPC. It had more colour palette than the Spectrum and the Commodore 64.
It's not very hard to have bigger colour palette than the Spectrum, is it? Four colours or something.
Yeah, four or eight colours or whatever it was. Yeah,
not many.
No, not many. But no, I did enjoy playing this game. I don't think I even paid for it. I think I found somehow, I have a memory of loading this game. I think somebody copied it for me. I can't remember. No, we don't condone piracy on this podcast.
No.
I think someone copied it for me. And it didn't work at first. I had to load it. I think it's because back in the day when you used to use cassettes, the heads could get dirty on the actual tape player. Mm-hmm. And you had to clean it so it could read the tape properly.
Right.
1980s problems and 1970s problems.
Yeah.
So I had to, it took a few attempts to load the game in, but I was impressed at the time by the main character sprite, and I remember it being a decent game, like a platforming game, but like I say, I don't remember completing it in 10 minutes, but I've seen playthroughs of it on YouTube that take about 10 minutes to play, which is crazy. I suppose if you know exactly where you're going and what you're doing, it could only take 10 minutes to play. But basically, there's a few levels that you get through. There's like puzzles that are that you got to crack by collecting code letters to get through different areas.
Right.
So the door that's locked, you've got to go and pick up like three different codes in the level to go into the next area. So that was the main kind of like way of getting around. Mm-hmm. You could use lifts to go between the various different floors once you'd unlocked it. And the idea is just to get to the end of the game. I can't even remember what the plot is, to be honest. All I remember is running around, killing enemies, getting through levels, and to make it to the last level, I suppose. But
right.
I don't think a lot of thought went into the plot on this one.
No,
it was a fun game to play at the time. You know, when I was 13 years old and there's not much to play, stick it on for 10 minutes, have a blast of it and come back later. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, it's a shame they never made a follow-up to this because you could use a flamethrower in this.
Right.
I think it was his main weapon. The fuel was limited for it, though, and he could refill it at various fuel points around about the levels and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Yeah, good game. There is a playthroughs on YouTube. Anybody who likes retro stuff might be interested. But I think that's it for Retro Corner.
Especially as they teased the sequel and then never made it.
Yeah, and they never made it. I think they got swallowed up by another company and then that company went bust. Right. So, as usual, these kinds of things happen. But I think, that's it for Retro Corner. Plan and watch, yes. So I am intending to get the platinum for Red Dead Redemption.
Right.
Whether I do it or not, it's a different matter because it is quite a grindy platinum.
Right.
You have to get 100% in both the main game and in the Undead Nightmare, which is the DLC for it.
Right.
And that involves pretty much doing everything in the game. You've got to do all the hideouts. You've got to talk to all the strangers and do all the missions. Right. You have to do all the challenges. There's various different challenges that you've got to do in the game. Like you have to kill a certain amount of wildlife and collect their skins or furs or whatever. And then you've got to find a load of treasure hunts to do. So it is quite a lengthy platinum. I watched a playthrough of somebody doing a platinum. Well, I say watch, it was like a edited video. It took him 67 hours to get the platinum.
Right.
from start to finish. I mean, I'm already like nearly 30 hours in, so I've got a bit to go yet. But yeah, I mean, as I said, in what we've been playing, I've really enjoyed playing it. So I am intending to go for the platinum.
Yeah.
Whether I get it or not is a different matter, because I think the most grindy trophy is the 100% ones. Like, there's a couple of examples. One of them, you have to play poker and you have to get 2,000 chips in one hand of poker.
All right.
And there was a way you could do it where you could always get a winning hand. Not really a cheat per se, but one of the missions is where you're playing poker and you get accused of cheating and then you have to do a duel.
Right.
So if you go back and replay that mission, you're already in a poker game and then you just have to keep like adding money to the pot to get it over 2,000 chips and then win the hand. And then took a few attempts to do that. The other one, which took me, did it last night, took me like half hour, 45 minutes. There's another game called Liar's Dice. And then basically, the object of Liar's Dice is you have to make your opponents lose all their dice, and you have five dice each,
right.
And you have to bet on or guess what numerical values on the dice that everybody's holding, and that's how Liar's Dice. Very shit explanation of Liar's Dice, but basically you have to play a round or game of Liar's Dice and not lose any of your dice.
All right,
it took me like so many attempts, like 20 attempts maybe over the space of 45 minutes. Because as soon as I lose one die, I just quit the game and started again. But I got that trophy. That's in the bag, that one. It's I never got the platinum back on the PS3 version or the PS4 version. I don't know what's something inside me said I needed to get the platinum for the PS5 version for whatever reason. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah. I don't think you got anything for Platinum Watch, have you, really?
No, not going to. Any platinum at all.
Maybe you get the platinum for Ghost of Yote. Let's see.
Maybe. I don't know how long it took you, but Carl said it took him like 60 hours.
Yeah, mine was like 57, 58 hours, something like that. So nearly 60 hours, yeah. It is quite a... I wouldn't say it was nowhere near a grind because I love the game, but it really depends on how much you enjoy it, I suppose. Yep.
I was just saying, Tsushima, in the 4 hours I played it, I enjoyed it, but it never got its claws into me.
No.
Whereas this one is feeling straight away like it's more my thing.
Yeah, good. Good. That's good. I mean, she's a different, actually, as much a different character from Jin from the first one. Straight away you're in the thick of it with her family being, not spoiler really, because it's the beginning of the game, this family being murdered.
Yeah.
That's her motivation. So I think this. The style of the game, you know, the way the presentation is fantastic. I mean, it's a big plus for that game. Shame it didn't win any a Game of the Year awards the Game of the Year, but whatever. It won some other awards, so, you know.
Yeah.
But no. Cool. So I think that's the end of Platinum Watch. It takes us into our main subject this week, which is a focus on the Mass Effect trilogy.
Yes.
So I looked up earlier, the original Mass Effect came out in the November 2007. So at that point, I'd had my Xbox for 18 months, I think it was.
Well, yeah, but it was a 360 exclusive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a 360 exclusive until the following year when it came out on PC.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't come out on PS3 until like 4 years after that.
Yeah.
So it was quite a while after it came out on PS3, the original Mass Effect.
Yeah.
But I can't remember how I heard about this game. I think my brother told me about this game because I had no I knew about BioWare because I played Knights of the Old Republic on the original Xbox.
Right, which they're remaking at the moment.
Yes, which I did play through and enjoyed. That was my first big RPG, I think, on consoles. I think that's right. Was that 2000 and 2005, I think that was, I played it.
Right, okay.
That sounds right. And I really enjoyed that game. So I was excited to know that BioWare developed this Mass Effect, you know. And booting up that first screen was like amazing. Because what I used to do those days, because daughters were quite a lot younger, once they'd gone to bed, and that's it. I was on the Xbox 360 playing it. And that, you know, the music that starts up at the menu screen is just like, I'm in already, and I'm not even playing. I think the experience of the first game can't really be replicated in today's technology, because when you get on board your ship called the Normandy, you have the elevator.
Yes.
Which is the loading screen, which
yes.
which I didn't realize at the time. Like, this takes a long time, this elevator, because it's loading in the game.
Yeah.
I suppose it was quite a novel way of loading the assets and stuff into the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you'd always be talking to your companions in that sort of in the lifts.
Yeah, it's true. But this was like, it took very much the same kind of system that BioWare had used, where it was like a pause the game, quote unquote, where, and then you can get your different powers, can't you?
Yeah.
Like the Paragon, Paragon, wasn't it?
Yeah, Paragon and Renegade.
Paragon and Renegade. So you had a Paragon powers where you could like lift enemies up, or you had your Renegade powers where you could like almost force push them away from you.
Yeah.
And you had like a shield and that kind of thing. But it played a lot like an it played like an interactive kind of comic book slash movie, I suppose.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you've got your different cut scenes and you got the dialogue options, which is one of BioWare's things where, you know, the dialogue wheel, where you're asked a question, you can ask, you have multiple answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which other games had done this at this time, but this was kind of unique to Mass Effect, where you could improve your relationship with various different characters throughout the game.
Yeah, but it always kind of hurt me a little bit that what you actually said for your answer on the wheel wasn't necessarily always what your actual character would say after you've selected that option.
Yeah, it was kind of a guide of what the character would say, but not the actual words. But yeah, the original Mass Effect, I put like 50 hours into it, I think.
I can't remember. I just come back to a little bit of what you're saying. It's funny, a bit funny that, so Mass Effect 2, was it, and 3 were both out on the PS3 before you had access to the first game on the PS3.
That's right.
Didn't think 1 came out on PS3 until they released the trilogy version, which you got all 3 games.
Yes, you're right. You could purchase Mass Effect 1 separately on the PSN, though, I think.
Oh, okay.
Which I think I did, because I already had 2 and 3.
Right.
I didn't really bother rebuying the trilogy, I don't think.
Right, okay.
But yeah. But no, so yeah, it was exclusive to Xbox, which I was glad I had at the time.
Yeah. So, I did enjoy Mass Effect 1 in the end, but I can't deny, of the original 3 on the original hardware, this is not talking about the remaster, the limited edition that came out later, the first game, by far, I found the biggest slog.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to get through for sure.
If I say that there's one word is the reason that the first game was a slog, see if you can get that one word is.
That's
the most annoying thing about the first game.
It's the fucking vehicle.
Yes. What's the vehicle called? No, I remember.
I can't remember what it's called.
It's the Mako.
Mako, that's it, yes.
Yeah. The Mako is the reason I found the first game such a slog, because it's just a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
It's control. They thankfully have improved it, shed loads in the remaster, and so having played through the first game again in Legendary Edition, it's nowhere near as much of a slog as I found it on the 360. But I think it took me like 6 months to finish the original on the 360 just because of the Mako.
Right. Because I went back and I look at my achievements when I started the game, and then when I finished the game, I actually finished the first game on Boxing Day 2007.
Oh, nice.
So I think I caned that game. But you're right, the Mako, now I don't remember that what the name is because you told me, was probably the worst part of the game. Everyone complained about it.
Yeah, it's just that they had certain missions that were mandatory. Based
on the
inside the Mako.
Yes.
And it was just a fucking nightmare. Like, sometimes I just couldn't fucking do the Mako missions.
Yeah.
I'd bang my head against it about a million times over to get through that section.
Yeah, it was difficult. I think the developers even talked about how they were really challenged and trying to make it, you know, work properly.
Yeah.
And they did the best that they could with what was available to them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, didn't do a very good job.
No, it wasn't a great way of getting around on the surfaces of the planets.
You just didn't control very well.
No. It controlled a bit like, because you could jump with it as well, which never fucking worked. Mm. It was like, jump, you fucker, jump. But yeah.
You had to do combat inside it, and the combat when you're in it wasn't that great either, and it's just a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was one of the weaknesses of the original Mass Effect game, was the Mako for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the strengths was just the character interaction was so good. The voice acting and the character models for the time, and we're going back to 2007,
mm-hmm.
was actually really good at the time.
I think there's a big argument that this one is the most pure RPG of the three, that definitely. The two and three are more action games than RPGs, whereas the first one was most definitely an RPG.
Yeah, I mean, the first one was more like the traditional BioWare RPGs, like Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm.
And what was the other one they did on Xbox?
Jade Empire?
Jade Empire, yeah, which I never played. I wanted to play that one, but I never got around to playing it. So I missed out on that one. I don't think it's on backwards compatibility either, which is a bit annoying. I have to double check on that.
Yeah.
But because I'm quite into the East Asian stuff,
mm-hmm.
So I would have liked to have played that one, but I didn't. But no, yeah, it was very much a proper RPG, quote unquote. You know, with skill points, and you know, and because I mean, they're a big sci-fi fan as well, it just hit all those buttons for me.
I always think Mass Effect is kind of like a mixture of Star Wars and Star Trek,
with a bit of like almost like, you know, I mean, you're not set on a space station, but it kind of reminded me a little of Babylon 5 if you ever watched that series.
Right, I never watched that one.
No, a little bit, you know, just with the character interactions and that kind of thing.
But you've got Shepard, who is the first human Spectre. I always find like Spectres are kind of a little bit like Jedi-ish.
Ish. Because the humans are regarded in this universe as a bit of like the newcomers to the galactic.
Yeah, well, I think we've only been in contact with the rest of them for like, was it like 40 years or something at the start?
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's not been a long time. Because the Mass Effect actually refers to the Mass Effect relays, which makes faster than light travel possible in the universe. That's mm-hmm. what Mass Effect refers to.
And I think humans are not well liked because before we knew about like the Galactic Council and all the other alien races, we found an old, like derelict, out of use Mass Effect relay and brought it back to life and started using it. And apparently that breaks all their laws.
Yeah, apparently.
So we were massively disliked for doing that to start with.
Because you do get quite a lot of, when you interact with like other characters or, you know. Other
species.
Yeah, other species. They're kind of a bit aloof with you and a bit gruff with you sometimes. Yeah. Like, oh, humans, who do you think you are, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, why did they make a human in a Spectre, blah, blah, blah. So you do get kind of a bit of confrontation, but it's good because it sets up like, you know, because the good thing about it is you can either go completely like diplomatic or you can just be a complete bastard or bitch, depending on what you're. Because the other thing was you could choose to be male or female.
Yeah.
And they were both voiced by fully voiced characters, male or female, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I think we need to touch on a bit about how good the world building is in this game. Like, you've got so many like alien species. They're all different and they've all got like their own cultures and rules and ideas, and they very much flesh out what each alien species does.
Yeah.
Even down to like the way they speak, and their little sort of intricacies, like, you know, the
Asari.
They live for like thousands of years. and they don't mate in like the usual way that majority of species do. Like they do it by like melding.
Yeah.
Almost a bit like Vulcans do in Star Trek, where they're like,
yeah, kinda.
Yeah. Which you'll found very interesting. And then you've got stuff like the Quarians who can't take their suits off because their immune system will like fail and they'll get ill and die.
Ill and die, yeah. And then you've got like the Krogans as well, haven't you?
Yeah. Who, of course, Krogans always remind me a little bit of Klingons.
Kind of, yeah, a little bit. They're a warfaring race, aren't they?
Yeah, and they've got this whole thing that, like, some of the earlier alien races, the Salarians and the Turians, like, created this genophage to stop them, like, from
breeding.
Yeah. Where basically, like, only 1 in 10 Krogan children survive after the genophage.
Yeah.
And so that's become a big thing and, like, sort of very much shaped how they view the universe and everything to do with their life.
Yeah, it's kind of like almost like you know bringing geopolitics into the space universe, which it is.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of. No, it doesn't get overly political, but there's definitely those, you know, considerations when you're talking to that member of any of those species.
Yeah. I know a lot of people like Ashley, one of the female characters in the first game, but I always found her a bit of a racist. She like hates all alien races. The only thing she doesn't hate is humans.
Yeah, yeah, there are a few characters like that, but there's also characters, you know, alien species characters who think they're superior to every other race in the galaxy. Yeah. So it kind of plays on both sides. But it's very, very cleverly done. Definitely.
And you've got like the Rachni, who are basically big giant bugs, but they're a sentient race.
Yeah.
And there was like the Rachni wars, where like the Krogan were brought in to wipe out the Rachni.
Yeah.
And then it becomes quite a big thing that you have an interaction with the Rachni in one of the missions. And after, when you get to the end of the mission, you finish the mission, you get to choose between whether you want to save them and just send them off back into the universe or to kill them all.
Yeah.
And then that decision, then it's one of the big things that happens with this trilogy, that the decisions you make in one then end up paying off in like two or three. And whichever choice you made affects how the story goes later on.
Yeah, because that's an interesting point, because the PS3 version didn't come out till way later.
Mm-hmm.
On the Mass Effect 2, when you do it on the PS3, there's like this interactive comic book that you could make the choices for Mass Effect.
From 1.
Yeah. And then
I introduced that comic later on to get it on 360 as well.
Yeah.
And when I was replaying 2, because it wasn't there the first time, there's a whole big thing on 1 where you've got a big decision to make that massively affects Rex, the Krogan member of your crew, and his fate.
Yeah.
And on my very first playthrough, I didn't manage to save Rex because you have to have enough Paragon or Renegade points to make the decision and be able to save him.
Yeah.
As part of that sort of conversation, I didn't have enough Paragon points, so I basically had a choice of kill Rex, and that was about it.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and so because of that, Rex is then gone.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and has a major part to play in 3.
Yeah.
And in my very first playthrough, Rex wasn't there to play his part in 3 and was replaced with some other Krogan.
Some other Krogan, yes. It's clever that they did that. Yeah, because Rex...
When you do the comic, it's just like, do you want to save Rex? Yes or no? It was just easy.
Yeah,
whereas it didn't really give the like, give the you that, like choice you, when you're actually playing the game.
It didn't give you that emotional impact. It wasn't the same. Definitely not. See, I had the same decision, but it's what I did was I reloaded my save and went back and got the right points and then saved
him. Right, and then you could save him.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not prepared for him to die, so I went back and did what I needed to do to get the amount of points to save him, so I did that. Right. But there are choices in the first one where you have to save one character or another. One of them has to die.
Well, yeah, I'm going to cut spoilers for like a almost
20-year-old game.
At one point, you have to choose either save Ashley or Caden.
Yes.
And you can't save both of them.
Can't save both of them. And whichever one you save, they make an appearance in Mass Effect 3.
Yes.
So
I think I saved Ashley first time round, and then it was like, oh, she's a pretty space racist.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt bad that I didn't save Caden.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that was the, you know, one of the things that BioWare said was the decisions you make in Mass Effect 1 will lead into the Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. That was one of the big things that they said, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what people, again, I'm jumping around a bit, but one of the big issues that people had with 3 is the whole thing that they said that, like, your choices will affect your ending of 3.
Yes.
And the ending of 3 was basically pick a color, red, green, or blue.
Unfortunately, yes.
All of your decisions up until that point that were supposed to be, like, three weren't really a thing.
No, I think they set themselves up for failure on that point, unfortunately, because they really did big it up and said, yeah, it will have meaningful impact in the rest of the trilogy, and it turned out it didn't really, which was disappointing.
Yeah. And so it's set like how many thousands of years in years ahead in the future. You as Shepard see like you touch a was it like a statue or something?
Something like that.
And you get a premonition about the Reapers.
Reapers, yeah.
Who are the big bads of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And your premonition is basically the Reapers are coming. And it kind of feels a bit like you spend all of the first and second game telling the council and everyone who listened the Reapers are coming, and they don't really listen to you until you're there in 3.
Yeah, and then 3 they turn up like, well, how did this happen? I've been telling you for like the last... two games at least this is gonna happen. Now it is.
Yeah,
now you want us to help, now you want us to save you. Yeah. Yeah, the Reapers were a good, I mean, a lot of people said, oh, it's a generic kind of MacGuffin enemy kind of thing, which I can kind of see that point, but you know, the threat was there, but...
Yeah, I liked them because you knew what they were and you knew their reasons for what they were doing.
Yeah. You knew what their motivations were, for sure.
Yeah, they were much more fleshed out than the bad guys in Andromeda, which we'll come on to a little bit, which is the only game they've released since the original trilogy.
Yes.
Where the bad guys are basically just like, bad guy does bad things. Why? Because he's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy, yeah. Motivations is pretty shit, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then you've got Saren, who was a Spectre.
Yeah.
And he's a Turian.
Yes. He's your favourite character in the whole of the trilogy, isn't he?
What, Saren?
No, not Saren, sorry. I'm thinking of the wrong one. I think the other
You're
one.
You're thinking of Garrus.
Yes, Garrus, sorry. Apologies.
Saren's not one of your team. Saren's the bad at the end of the first game. He's like the last boss, and it turns out he's being controlled by Sovereign, which is a Reaper.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't think Saren's my favourite, but no, Garrus, sorry, I did like Garrus.
Garrus, because they're the same species. I got confused.
Yes, they're both Orion.
Sorry.
And then when you do finally kill Saren at the end of the first game, you then have this decision between saving the Galactic Council or all of the people.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I saved the people. Fuck the council.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same, I think. Yeah.
Like, you save a bunch of politicians or all of the people. Like, well, yeah. Save the people, please.
That's what we're going to do. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But now the conclusion of the first game. Does it leave it on a cliffhanger? I think it does, doesn't it? I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've played the original, and yeah. I played the remaster a few years ago. And I can't, maybe it doesn't leave it on a cliffhanger, but it leaves it with the Reaper threat still in place.
Very much so.
Which leads you into Mass Effect 2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mass Effect 2 came out on Xbox 360 in January 2010. I didn't have an Xbox 360 at that time. I'd moved on to PlayStation, so I didn't actually play it on its release. I played it a year later when
it
came out.
Was it still timed exclusive to 360?
Yeah, right? It was for a year. Okay. It came out a year later on PS3.
Right.
Which obviously the interactive comic that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So I knew about it, but I tried my best to stay away from any kind of spoilers for a year until I played it in the January of 2011. On PS3.
So the sequel, they removed the Mako.
Yeah.
So even though these games aren't open world really anyway.
Not really.
The first game is more open world than the second or third, because at least there was places to explore in the Mako.
Yeah.
In the first game, whereas of course there's none of that in the second one. And then the second one, you start by dying as Shepard.
Yeah, you're on the Normandy. Like,
yeah, the original Normandy gets blown to pieces.
Yeah. And you end up dying, as Shepard,
And then you were brought back by, what's the human terrorist group?
Oh,
Cerberus.
Cerberus, yeah.
And Cerberus are not well liked. Like, so you're part of the Alliance, who are kind of similar in Mass Effect to what they are in Star Trek, sort of thing, in the first game.
Yeah.
And it's Cerberus who are these terrorist group that bring you back from death.
Yes.
And then you get like a certain reaction from a lot of Alliance people with the fact that you're with Cerberus in the second game.
Yeah.
And you've got the Smoking Man, who is the head of Cerberus.
Yeah.
Is that what he's called? Smoking? I don't know. He is smoking. Was he actually called Smoking Man?
I think he was called Smoking Man. Yeah. He did get a name eventually, but I can't remember what it was.
Mm.
But no, he does. You see him is smoking cigarettes.
Yes, and he's played by Martin Sheen.
Yeah,
famous actor.
Yep.
And so then,
Elusive Man. That's
Elusive Man. That was it. Sorry. Yeah. But he's smoking all the time, even though he's...
Yeah, maybe you're getting confused, the Smoking Man out of the X-Files.
X-Files, yeah, I am getting confused.
It's fair enough. He does smoke a lot as well.
He does. And so then you get, like, a new version of the Normandy in 2 after the original one gets blown up.
See, I got confused with the new Normandy. I just thought, oh, it's just a rebuild. But it's like 3 times the size of the original one, which I didn't realize until I was a few hours into it. I'm like, this ship's massive. It's like, because it's 3 times the size of the original.
Mm, yeah.
It's even called the Normandy 2, isn't it, I think?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And you spend an awful lot of 2 recruiting for your team.
Yes.
And we haven't really touched on that much. You have your companions. You've always got a fire team of 3, and you get to choose from, is it, what, 6 companions in the first game?
I think so, yeah.
Pick 2 of the 6 to come with you on each mission.
Yeah.
And in 2, you have, what, 12 to choose from, I think?
Sounds right, yeah.
Yeah. And so spend an awful lot of time in 2 just recruiting more people to come and be part of your crew.
Yeah.
And then they all have loyalty missions, which is like a side mission that you have to do to gain their loyalty.
Which some of them are really, really, really involved, like hours long.
Yes. And the loyalty missions become important later on in 2.
Yeah. Yeah. The loyalty missions are really... I enjoyed the loyalty missions more than the main story of the game.
Yeah, they're pretty good as far as Sega quests go. And we've not really touched on, as well as the Reapers, in the second one you've got the Collectors.
Yes.
Which turns out are an alien race. So we haven't really mentioned them yet. Is it an alien race that died out called the Protheans?
Yeah.
Like thousands of years before us.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the Reapers turned the Protheans into the Collectors.
Yes, that's right.
And the Collectors are going to... human, and not just human, but going to planets and taking all of the population from that planet onto their ships.
Yeah, exactly.
And my 2 is basically building towards, eventually you've got the suicide mission at the end of the game.
Yeah, they call it the suicide mission because you're not expected to survive.
Yes.
Or any of your team are expected to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on your actions, they either can all die or they can all live. Or yes. A mixture of those two.
Yes, and your loyalty missions for your crew become important because if the crew member is not loyal, when you start the suicide mission, they will die.
Yeah, there's actually an achievement / trophy for getting all of your companions through the suicide mission.
Yes, called No One Gets Left Behind.
Yes, which is pretty cool, which I did get.
Hmm.
Because I made sure I did all the loyalty missions.
Yeah, although I didn't, in the remaster, I didn't get it my very first time playing the remaster. I made a wrong decision and put, what's the Salarian scientist?
What's his name? So what's his name? Solus.
Yeah, Morden Solus.
Yeah.
I put him in a wrong, like, you can choose which people to do which roles in the suicide mission.
Yeah.
And because I put him into a role that he's not good at, he died.
He died, yeah, yeah. So you can, even if you think you're making the right decision, you can still get him killed. So,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't get No One Gets Left Behind very first time round because of that, because he died. He was the only one who died, but he did die.
Yeah. I think I've got, like, 86% of the trophies for Mass Effect 2 Legendary Edition. So I'm not.
That's about what I had, and is the reason I ended up going back to it and then getting the platinum because I had so many done already that I ticked off in the first playthrough.
Yeah.
On the Legendary Edition, that I just went back and finished it, and it took me like maybe 10 to 15 hours to get the remaining ones. It wasn't massive.
Yes. But no, yeah, it's the Mass Effect 2 kind of ramped up the, you know, the, it moved away a little bit from the RPG elements, like you said before, yeah, moved towards more of an action adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Still having the, you know, you could still level up.
Yeah.
But you could just set it to auto level and not worry about it
mm-hmm.
At all, which I think I pretty much did that, I think, on my first playthrough. I've just right. I started doing it and I was like, I just let it auto level me and it worked out all right in the end.
Yeah.
But that was available to you if you wanted to do that.
And we've not really touched on there's like romance options through all three games.
Yeah, you could romance different characters in the first game. Well, all three games, you could romance the various different characters, male or female.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you can decide if your character is gay or straight. And then if you're romancing one of your teammates, your NPCs, they've all got, of course, their own preferences. Yeah. So you can waste your time trying to romance one of the female characters and then you later on realize she's a lesbian.
Yeah. He's like, oh, okay.
That's why she's not interested.
Yeah, that's why it's not going to work. I remember so much running around the Citadel in the first game, but not so much in the second game.
No, I mean, you spend more time in the Citadel in 3 than you do in 2.
Yeah, you spend a lot of time in the Citadel in 3. There's a lot of time running around the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, 2, the music in 2 was really good.
Yes, I mean, the music in the whole trilogy is good. But
music in the whole trilogy. Yeah, you're right. But 2 stands out to me. Especially when you're doing the suicide mission with Shepard, it's really, really good. Like the soundtrack, they did a real good job of the soundtrack. Because these were actually published by EA, weren't they?
Well, yeah, because EA ended up buying BioWare after the first game.
Yeah, after the first game. Because I'm not sure who published the first game.
Wasn't it Xbox?
It might have been. Let's have a look and see.
Wasn't it like an Xbox Game Studios thing?
Yeah, let's just check and see Mass Effect. So, yes, Microsoft Game Studios published it.
You're right.
Yeah, BioWare developed it. And then the second game, EA had already bought BioWare and they published it for Xbox 360 and then a year later for PS3.
Yes, and you can instantly tell the difference with EA money for 2 and 3 that wasn't there for the first game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
bigger budgets
for sure. I think that's why they were able to. I can't remember how many hours I put into Mass Effect 2, but it was a lot. I basically played it right through from start to finish and didn't play any other game while I was doing it.
They're very gripping games once you get into them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I think 2 was the peak of the trilogy for me.
Yes,
just because 2
is the best of the 3.
Yeah, just because of all the loyalty missions, the structure of the missions, the weapons, the powers. Because the powers can play quite a lot into the combat of the game.
Yeah, depending on what class you choose.
Yeah, depending on what class you choose, for sure. I mean, you can just use conventional weapons if you want, but...
If you pick soldier, you can use every gun, but you have no bio powers.
No bio powers at all. I think I went as... I can't remember what I did for the second game, but... You can also use your companions. You can command your companions,
yes,
to use their powers if they have them, or put them in various places. Because it is kind of set up like, you know, you're about to get into combat when you get into an area and there's all like these boxes that you can hide behind. That's just a trope of those kinds of games at that time.
I mean, because it's a third-person shooter. It's a third-person cover-based shooter as far as the combat goes.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I think the second one is very much a point of the game where it just gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
The
more you get into it, the better it gets.
Yeah.
You know, and the Reaper threat is getting more and more in this game, and that leads into the third game.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's been a while since I played the third game. I can't remember.
Well, it pretty much starts with the Reapers invading... Which planet is it? It's the Turian planet first, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and then they invade the Turian planet and then come to Earth.
Yeah.
And Shepard has been decommissioned because he was part of Cerberus.
Yeah.
And the Alliance getting back again because of the Reapers that just... everywhere and just attacking all the major cities in the world.
Well, it's because you have this ability to see what the Protheans slash collectors saw in the Reapers and how to defeat them. Isn't that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and you get sent to Mars because you hear there's something on Mars. And yeah. Then when you get to Mars, you find that Liara's there.
Yeah.
Because she's not really into...
No.
She's in the Shadow Broker DLC into or whatever it's called, but that's about it. And so you meet up with Liara, and it turns out she's got these this plans for a weapon that's supposed to stop the Reapers, and the Protheans were making it as well, but they never finished it.
Yeah, that's right. Because three took a while to get going, if I remember right. I'm like, there's a lot of like interaction in the first couple of hours, not much combat until it starts to get going again. And then I might be wrong about that. I've got a memory now of like the first scene, actually you having to fight your way through something.
There's quite a lot of Reaper troops that you have to fight your way through at the beginning.
That's right. Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking. Like I said, I've only played through Mass Effect 3 once.
Right.
Okay. And that was on the PS3. I started the Legendary Edition on PS4, but I literally only played the first hour, I think. So I haven't got a good memory of 3. So I'm going off my memories of like when it came out in 2012, I think it was.
2012, yeah.
Yeah. Which was only a year after Mass Effect 2 for me, but obviously 2 years after Mass Effect 2 for everybody else who played on 360. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was a lot of scanning in 3, I remember. Was that 2? Like scanning planets for resources?
That's 2.
Is it 2? Right, so I'm getting confused. Because it was only a year apart from me.
Yeah.
But yeah, in 3, it's kind of getting towards the end game for Shepard and the Alliance and Cerberus and Reapers and everything.
Yeah.
Because you do meet characters from the first game. Did some characters from the second game do show up, but not a lot?
Yeah.
It's mainly from the first game or new characters show up.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that you've got to gather enough resources for the Alliance to be able to defeat the Reapers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got like a little resource meter, if I remember right.
Yes, there is a bar on a certain part of the ship that you have to get it past.
Past a certain amount.
And in the original version on the Xbox 360 and the PS3, you had to do the multiplayer as well to build the bar up to maximum.
That's right.
And people didn't like the fact that you've been forced to play multiplayer to get a maximum, a perfect sort of bar for the one player.
Yeah, because 3 was the only one that had multiplayer.
That's true.
Yeah. Which I didn't. I never actually played it. I don't know if you did.
No, I did.
No, I didn't.
No? It was pretty good. It was like a horde mode, pretty much.
Okay.
And I wasn't great at it, but Matt managed to meet a guy called Jacob, who probably isn't listening to this, who was unbelievable at the multiplayer.
Oh, right, okay.
So if we ever played with Jacob and we were playing on like harder difficulties, we didn't really need to worry, because even if the rest of the team all got killed, we would watch Jacob mop up every single time. Even on like the hardest difficulty that the game had.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds like you played a lot of it.
I've still got him on my PlayStation and Xbox friend list, even though I haven't really played any games with the guy for years. But he was a sound guy.
That's interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't think I even dipped my toe into the multiplayer, I don't think. I may have booted up a match, maybe. I can't remember.
You didn't shoot each other. You're always on the same team against the Reapers or whichever enemies, because it's like horde mode.
Yeah, it kind of felt like they shoehorned that into that game. That's what it
happened
at the time.
Mm.
But I wasn't there for the multiplayer. I was there for the single
player. Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah,
so you have to like build alliances, gather everything you can to get everyone working together against the Reapers.
Yeah.
So that when you get to like the final battle later on, you've got enough in your bar to not only like meet the minimum requirements, but hopefully, I think like one of the trophies or achievements is about like filling it up completely, isn't it? And being
ready
for the sort of the big push.
Yeah. Yeah. Because don't you use the Citadel in the third one?
Yes.
As a weapon.
Well, yeah, so the weapon you're building with Liara that she finds plans for on Mars, it uses the Citadel to power itself up.
That's right, yeah.
And then you've got like sort of the when you do the big battle, the you know the final fight, you kind of end up going up onto the Citadel because you're on Earth for the start of the big battle.
Yeah.
And it beams, there's like a big beam that beams you up into the Citadel.
Yeah.
And then the weapon was expected to go off when you go into the beam. And then you meet the Catalyst, which is this little kid that apparently you have to, like, he's like created by the Reapers and you have to convince him to, you know, set the weapon off.
Yes.
And this is where the three colors comes in.
Into it, yes.
So you can either, I'm trying to remember which one it is. It's something like the red one, is it that the Catalyst just kills the Reapers? They're all dead. But this will also mean that any artificial life, like any androids or Geth, or anything like that, will all be killed when the Reapers die as well. And then you've got, what's the other colors? You've got like a Symbios one.
Yeah, where you can merge.
Yeah, you merge with the Reapers. And so all sort of you normal life will have a little bit of AI inserted into them.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember what the third one is now.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the third one was. Like I said, I've only played it once, so but I know there was like three endings or, you know, colors, like you say, that you could choose. And I can't remember what the other one was.
So you've got kill them all, merge, and is it not kill them? Is it like save them and make them your slaves? Is that the third choice?
Something like that, yes. Yeah, I believe it's something like that. Mm. So just having read up on it here, you've got the three options for the Crucible. So destroy all synthetic life in the galaxy.
Yes, the Crucible is the big weapon we've been trying to build.
Control the Reapers by uploading Shepard's consciousness to become the new Catalyst.
Yeah.
Or alter all life into organic synthetic hybrids via synthesis to render the Reapers obsolete. Yeah. They're the three main, which is why a lot of people got annoyed about this. It's like, well, I've made all the decisions and then just give me three choices at the end of Mass Effect 3.
Yep.
Or variations of.
And people weren't happy with the ending cutscene that you got, no matter what choice you made.
So much so that they updated it with a new cutscene about a year later.
Yeah, because it was such a backlash about the actual ending
that
people kicked off about.
So BioWare went back and programmed in a new cutscene for the ending.
Yeah, just padded out a bit to explain a bit more.
Yeah, because it was a bit like, what the fuck happened? kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, as a trilogy, it works incredibly well still. You know, there's never been anything like it where your choices over various games play into each other.
No, okay, not really.
Fair enough, it boiled down to three main choices in the end of the trilogy, but you know, you could have the same character model in 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
So you created, because you could create your own character model in 1, and that could play through right to the end.
2 and then 3, yeah.
Yeah, so there's never really been another game series that has done that, I don't think.
I don't think so.
But yeah, I mean, if you've never played Mass Effect, and
we've just spoiled it pretty much all of it for you.
But if you've never played it, or you only ever played the first one and didn't play this, I didn't urge you to play the Legendary Edition on either Xbox, PC, or PlayStation.
Yeah,
don't think there's not a Switch version, is there?
No, the only version of Mass Effect that's out on a Nintendo platform at all is Mass Effect 3 came out on the Wii U.
But
they didn't release the first and second one.
No.
I always found it a bit strange. So, you know that comic you mentioned from 2?
Yeah.
Updated version of that on the Wii U version that fills in all of the choices and plot from 1 and 2.
Oh, right.
There's only 3 on Wii U. You couldn't, if you only had a Wii U, you couldn't play 1 and 2.
I'd completely forgotten that 3 had come out on the Wii U.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't even realize it had come out on the Wii U at all.
It was like a launch game.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, it would be, the Switch 2 could definitely have the Legendary Edition on for sure.
Oh, definitely.
It'd be cool to play it on there, you know.
Yeah.
But can't BioWare in a bit of trouble as well, aren't they?
Well, yeah. And like I said, there was a bit of a backlash. I think 3 is not very well liked.
I think because 2 was the pinnacle of the trilogy, really. 3 had a lot to live up to, and it didn't quite make it, I don't think.
No, but I still think I prefer 3-1, which is possibly a controversial opinion. The actual gameplay in 3 was even smoother than the gameplay in 2.
Yeah, the gameplay is well refined by the time they got to the third one.
Yeah.
I think mine would go 2-1, then 3, purely right. Because 1 was like the OG and there'd not been like anything like that, really. Mm-hmm. And 3 is the one, my least favourite one, purely because it just seemed a bit of a grind getting to the end of that game, especially with the bar to fill it up with the fucking resources for the Alliance and all the other. It's like, fucking hell, you're just making me like, it just felt like sometimes like busy work.
Mm.
That's kind of what it felt like to me at the time. I mean, like I say, I haven't replayed it since, so maybe my opinion would change if I replayed it. Mm. But I mean, we have talked about it before. A few years later, they released Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yes, which is technically the fourth game.
Technically, but it's set in a different galaxy.
Yeah. Original trilogy in the Milky Way galaxy, which is ours, and this is set in a completely different galaxy.
Andromeda galaxy.
Yeah.
And it's set 600 years after the events of the original trilogy. So it's way, way in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I did watch a video. I'll put the link in the description of Mass Effect Andromeda because there's a guy who thinks it's underrated. And I'm like, that's controversial because it was released to pretty much, you know, nobody really liked the game because of all the bugs that it had. And, you know, it wasn't very well received when it first launched. They did.
No, I mean, I think the actual gameplay, the combat in Andromeda is pretty decent.
Yeah. But the story is the bit that lets it down.
Yes. And there's also all that facial animation stuff.
Yes.
That at launch when I played it was a big deal, big problem.
They did clean that up. They did clean that up.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
But your character pulled some very strange faces when I first played it.
Yeah. All I remember is that onboard computer calling me Pathfinder every other sentence and it drove me fucking batty.
Yeah.
He drove me fucking insane.
You're not Shepard, of course, in Andromeda. You are the Pathfinder.
Yeah, so you play you're a twin, and so there's a male and female.
Yeah.
And that's how they do it in this game, where you can choose which twin you want to play through, and the other twin is in cryostasis for like three quarters of the game until they join you towards the end of the game. Mm-hmm. So that's actually the decisions there. It definitely wasn't as good as any of the original trilogy games.
No, near.
Definitely not. Although the Mako in it, because the Mako made a return or whatever it was called.
Yes, whatever the vehicle was called in Andromeda.
Was a lot better than the original. Yes,
definitely. Yeah. But that's not hard considering how bad it was in the original version of 1.
No, yeah. I mean, they are working on a Mass Effect, it's just called Mass Effect 5.
Yeah.
But there's no release date. We don't know.
No. So there's a teaser.
Yeah.
It's got Liara in it. And the other thing we haven't touched on is that Shepard survives the end of 3 is the canon, even though he's in. There's a bit where he shows like all the people that die and Shepard's name's at the top of it.
Yes.
But then if you get the best good ending at the end of 3, you see him like take a breath, or his body takes a breath. That's so he's supposed to survive.
Yeah.
So in theory, Shepard could be back in 5 and he could be playing him again. But when they put this teaser out to announce Mass Effect 5, apparently they hadn't actually started working on the game at all at that point.
Hmm. Interesting.
Last I heard, it was still in pre-production.
Yeah. We've not heard a lot about it.
Might be a good 3 or 4 years away still.
Easily. It'd be cool to see what a new Mass Effect game in the modern console /PC would look like.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, as long as they can, because BioWare have had a few, you know, they had a complete misfire with Anthem, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, because Andromeda wasn't good, and then Anthem was supposed to be this like, oh, but Andromeda's not good because they've been concentrating on Anthem, and then Anthem was also not good.
Yeah. It does make you wonder how much interference from the publisher has been in regards to, you know, the release of these games.
Because
also there was the whole debacle with Dragon Age Inquisition. Not Inquisition, Mage Veilguard, which I really liked. I talked about that on podcast last year. You know, I think that was unfairly, in my view, derided by a lot of people.
Right.
Just because a few conversations in a couple of hours in the latter half of the game, and that was the whole thing about that game. But yeah. But I liked the Veilguard. I did like it.
Right.
So apparently that new Mass Effect game was released. It was announced all the way back in 2020.
Yeah.
So it's been, you know, more than 5 years.
Yeah, but like I say, when they announced it and put the teaser out, they didn't actually have any game. They hadn't actually started working on it.
No,
they just literally put the teaser together to stick it out there to let people know that they're going to make one. And they hadn't actually started working on it,
and we haven't heard really much about it since.
No.
So they're working on a game, but when it's going to come out, if it comes out, hopefully it will.
Yeah.
So, but because there's not really any of a kind of. Trying to think of a game that I played which is kind of similar to Mass Effect. That game that came out, the trailer at the Game Awards, we talked about it. That game. Yes.
It was one of my honorable mentions for our games we're looking forward to.
That's right, yeah. Exodus. So that kind of looks like it might be almost like a spiritual successor to the Mass Effect.
Yeah, well, trilogy, being made by some ex-BioWare developers who also work on Mass Effect.
On Mass Effect, so yeah. And that, is that coming out next year? No, next this year.
2027.
Next year, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I think that brings us to the end of that section.
Yeah.
So you can email us at twoguysfreeconsoles@yahoo.com. That's all letters, no numbers.
Yep.
We've got a Discord channel, which is free to join. The link is in the description.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Blue Sky, Instagram, and TikTok, which we never use.
Yeah.
Two Guys Free Consoles. We've got a Facebook group, also Two Guys Free Consoles, and a YouTube channel, which is audio only. Two Guys Free Consoles.
Yes.
And my Instagram is LMLeach26 and my Blue Sky is @LeachOne.
Yeah, my Instagram is J_Monster and my Blue Sky is JMonster, no space, no underscore.
Good stuff. So I think that brings us to the end of episode 46. Thank you for listening if you have been doing so. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Yeah, thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye.